Muito bem, cabe-me agora a minha vez de dar uma saudação muito especial, muito amiga e muito feliz a todas e a todos os presentes, altos quadros do Ministério da Saúde e que se dedicam a estas matérias, bastonários presentes e bastonários antigos, evidentemente todos os preletores e todas as senhoras e senhores convidados e, no último, que significa também, em primeiro lugar, os meus colegas deputados que aqui estão também a assistir a esta conferência, querendo também, evidentemente, nela participar. Dizer que foi um gosto organizar esta primeira conferência, este primeiro colóquio com o meu colega deputado Jorge Neto, presidente da Comissão de Orçamento e Finanças. Dividimos tarefas, entendemos-nos bem, que uma outra coisa não seria de esperar, apesar de pertencermos a partidos diferentes, mas no desempenho institucional dos nossos papéis e com toda a cortesia que deve pautar o nosso relacionamento, entendemos-nos em termos de quem convidar para que temas e para que títulos de painéis, uma vez que tudo isto significa escolhas. E as escolhas que são feitas não significam ostracização de ninguém ou menorização de ninguém. Como nós sabemos, se há mundo vasto, é o mundo da saúde e não podemos ter todas as áreas que são absolutamente essenciais para a construção, quer do Serviço Nacional de Saúde, quer do sistema de saúde, sem fazer estas escolhas e na Assembleia da República as escolhas são políticas. E foi isso que nós fizemos, porque falar de sustentabilidade financeira do Serviço Nacional de Saúde e do sistema de saúde é realmente falar de um conjunto de matérias que são preponderantes, importantes, que nos colocam desafios que são absolutamente inegáveis. E são inegáveis, sobretudo, quando nós estamos a viver uma crise financeira global que, evidentemente, tem efeitos na capacidade de recolha de receitas que serão afetas a estes sistemas. O que é um facto é que, e precisamente na sequência desta crise, tem havido inúmeras conferências internacionais, eu refiro apenas duas delas, uma de todos os ministros de Assuntos Sociais do Conselho da Europa, que se realizou em Moscou no fim de março, e uma outra durante a presidência checa, que ainda decorre sobre precisamente a sustentabilidade financeira dos sistemas de saúde. Na primeira conferência, e uma conferência do âmbito do Conselho da Europa, como todos sabem, tem um número vasto de países bastante maior do que a União Europeia, todos os ministros se comprometeram a considerar como essencial a despesa que construa a coesão social. Porque não podemos ignorar que em épocas de crise os sistemas de proteção social são estabilizadores sociais. E se nós acrescentarmos à crise, que já em si é fomentadora de desemprego, a desestabilização de não garantir apoios às pessoas, pois evidentemente aquilo que nós deixássemos de afetar à saúde, porventura teríamos que afetar à administração interna. E, portanto, esta matéria é uma matéria de escolhas políticas e daí o programa que se desenhou. Temos connosco o gosto de contar para fazer uma análise mais abrangente e a nível da União Europeia a professora Sarah Thompson, da London School of Economics, que eu saúdo neste momento e com certeza nos fará uma conferência que nos permitirá alargar a nossa visão sobre estes problemas. E temos depois também dois painéis. Um sobre o SNS e a sustentabilidade financeira, porque, como todos sabem, foi nomeada uma comissão presidida pelo professor Jorge Simões, pelo Ministro da Saúde de então, para analisar esta matéria e o seu relatório acabou por nunca ter chegado a ser discutido na Assembleia da República. Portanto, é importante que essa apresentação e essa discussão se façam, da mesma maneira que teremos também connosco o Dr. Adalberto Campos Fernandes, que é Presidente do Conselho de Administração do Hospital de Santa Maria, como um grande prestador de serviços do Serviço Nacional de Saúde, o maior hospital que tem, para além, digamos, da sua componente assistencial, uma articulação muito profunda e muito íntima com a Faculdade de Medicina de Lisboa. Temos também o Sr. Eugénio Rosa. Tínhamos previsto a presença do Sr. Bagó Félix, que por incompatibilidade de horários com os seus compromissos docentes não vai poder vir, mas isso, como é evidente, deixar-nos-á mais tempo para o debate, e aquilo que eu peço é que todas as pessoas sejam muito interventivas, porventura até provocadoras, porque é através desse registro que nós podemos encontrar melhores conclusões. Depois, em relação aos desafios do futuro, evidentemente, podíamos ter vários. Não incluímos aqui a questão da Health Technology Assessment, que é hoje algo de muito presente para as escolhas que hoje podem ser feitas para a não hipoteca do futuro, mas assentamos em identificar dois aspectos: a questão do envelhecimento, como sabem, constitui uma pressão forte sobre os sistemas de saúde, e a questão dos medicamentos novos, se é que todos os medicamentos que aparecem como novos são verdadeiramente novos, e aqui mais um campo interessantíssimo e importantíssimo de discussão. Ora bem, haveria muito a dizer sobre estas matérias, como calculam, mas não é a sessão de abertura que compete ser, digamos, o orador e o dissecador de todos estes problemas que aqui hoje vão estar em cima da mesa e entregues e depositados também na vossa apreciação crítica ou na vossa apreciação contributiva de novas ideias. Aquilo que eu queria dizer é que, do meu ponto de vista, não se pode falar em sustentabilidade financeira esquecendo a capacidade que o Serviço Nacional de Saúde encerra em si próprio de dinamizador, quer do emprego, quer das atividades económicas, quer da sustentação da produtividade dos trabalhadores de uma sociedade, e não só da produtividade daqueles que estamos ativos, mas daqueles que já estando reformados têm um papel a desempenhar nas sociedades, porque também hoje nós sabemos que estar reformado não significa estar inativo. Cada vez mais temos que contar com mais pessoas com mais saúde. Não tivemos tempo aqui, mas porventura será no debate, de analisar uma questão que é hoje também uma questão importantíssima sobre as escolhas a fazer e as tais escolhas políticas em termos do financiamento de prestação de serviços propriamente dito para tratar quem está doente, ou do financiamento dos serviços para evitar que as pessoas adoeçam. É também uma magna questão, tem sido objeto e vai sendo objeto de cada vez mais análises, e esta questão também, como as outras, é uma questão eminentemente política, uma vez que, por vezes, nas escolhas políticas se fazem, opta-se mais por objetivos de curto prazo do que pelos objetivos de longo prazo, que são, ao final, proporcionados por essa cultura da promoção da saúde e a prevenção da doença. Portanto, senhoras e senhores, estimado colega Jorge Neto, muito obrigada pela vossa presença, muito obrigada pela vossa disponibilidade para virem aqui dialogar connosco matérias com esta dimensão e esta importância nas sociedades de hoje, e aquilo que eu desejo é que os trabalhos sejam frutuosos e que nesta sala tão cheia de simbolismo e tão importante para a nossa vida democrática nós possamos chegar a conclusões que a todos enriqueçam, para que possamos efetivamente construir um futuro cada vez melhor e não um futuro decapitado de tudo aquilo em que nós acreditamos e para o qual muitos de nós lutaram no sentido de fazer deste país um país mais coeso, mais equilibrado, mais solidário e, sobretudo, um país com futuro. Muito obrigada.
Muito bom dia a todos. Em nome da Comissão de Orçamento e Finanças que me honro presidir, queria também desejar as boas-vindas a todos os convidados e presentes nesta sala. Depois das sábias palavras do Presidente da Assembleia da República, Dr. Jaime Gama, e da minha estimada colega e amiga, Dr. Maria Belém, não tenho muito mais a dizer, confesso, e, portanto, não irei ser muito longo nesta minha introdução. Diria apenas o seguinte, nesta mesma sala do Senado, discutimos anualmente o Orçamento de Estado. É aqui que nós realizamos longas sessões de apreciação e discussão do Orçamento de Estado em todos os azimutos. É aqui que recebemos os ministros setoriais para discutir as matérias concretas do Orçamento de Estado, designadamente a matéria da saúde. E, anualmente, ciclicamente, constatamos, e eu constato, como Presidente da Comissão de Orçamento e Finanças, que o Orçamento do Ministério da Saúde é sempre o maior orçamento no âmbito global da despesa do Estado. Tem sensivelmente o dobro do segundo maior, que é o da educação, e está a légua distância dos demais orçamentos setoriais. Isto significa a importância e o relevo do ponto de vista financeiro que tem o Serviço Nacional de Saúde e o Sistema Nacional de Saúde. Isto significa também que, em tempo de crise, como é aquele que nós vivemos, o rigor na aplicação dos dinheiros públicos deve ainda ser mais exigente. Isso leva a que uma reflexão como esta que vamos travar aqui hoje sobre o financiamento do Serviço Nacional de Saúde seja fundamental para que o legislador possa estar municiado de uma reflexão sábia, de uma reflexão prudente e avisada sobre os melhores caminhos para, racionalizando os meios, racionalizando os recursos, conseguir uma prestação de um serviço melhor, com mais qualidade e mais eficiente. E essa é, de facto, a grande dificuldade que se coloca do ponto de vista do Financiamento Nacional da Saúde. Racionalizar recursos, mas manter e, se possível, aumentar a qualidade dos serviços prestados. Eu não esqueço nunca que o Serviço Nacional de Saúde é, ao cabo e ao resto, um reflexo e um aspecto máximo do Estado de Proteção Social. E é uma conquista civilizacional que não pode, de modo algum, ser postergada nem subestimada. É algo que deve ser mantido, é algo que deve ser apoiado. Mas é importante que, nos tempos difíceis que atravessamos, haja também alguma racionalidade na apreciação e na execução das tarefas desse Serviço Nacional de Saúde. Sei, tenho presente, que há um conceito que a Constituição da República Portuguesa prevê, que é o conceito da prestação de serviços, tendo em consideração a montante o facto de ele ser tendencialmente gratuito. Sei que este conceito é um conceito polémico e tem suscitado, no passado recente, muita especulação e muita controvérsia, designadamente relativamente àquilo que deve ser considerado ou não um serviço no âmbito do Serviço Nacional de Saúde, ou aquilo que deve ser considerado uma tributação com vista a moderar os ímpetos de recurso, por vezes desenfreado e abusivo, ao próprio Serviço Nacional de Saúde. Essa é uma das matérias polémicas que está em causa, mas que entronca, ao cabo e ao resto, na velha questão do financiamento do Serviço Nacional de Saúde e da necessidade de racionalizar os recursos do Serviço Nacional de Saúde. É óbvio que há outras matérias que em sede orçamental se discutem e muitas delas ainda são um pouco opacas do ponto de vista do controle e do escrutínio orçamental. Recordem, em particular, as parcerias público-privadas, em que a informação muitas vezes não abunda e há até mesmo uma assimetria manifesta de informação entre aquilo que é disponível ou que está disponibilizado ao Executivo e aquilo que é acessível aos Parlamentos e aos deputados. E onde é importante, de facto, perceber com rigor aquilo que é a eficácia e aquilo que são os benefícios da realização destas parcerias público-privadas. E é óbvio, a interação entre o setor público e o setor privado é uma vexata questão que ainda está por resolver e que hoje, de facto, refletir sobre ela. Aliás, eu gostaria de sublinhar que a questão do Financiamento Nacional de Saúde não é uma questão que se coloca apenas em Portugal, é uma questão que se coloca hoje à escala planetária. Eu recordo em particular que, recentemente, quando a eleição do Presidente Obama, um dos seus objetivos foi exatamente a cobertura global de saúde a nível da população, a toda a população americana. Sabemos que há, de facto, uma faixa significativa da população americana que não é objeto de cobertura de saúde. Sabemos que a saúde nos Estados Unidos muitas vezes privilegia os interesses das seguradoras e os interesses privados em detrimento do interesse generalizado da população e Obama tem esta preocupação central de alargar a cobertura de saúde a toda a população dos Estados Unidos. Eu recordo ainda que recentemente o próprio Senado americano, através de duas comissões, por sinal, a Comissão de Saúde e a Comissão de Finanças. A Comissão de Finanças, presidida pelo senador Max Baucus, e a Comissão de Saúde, presidida por um senador muito conhecido, Edward Kennedy, estão neste momento exatamente a elaborar um plano no sentido de dar guarida de uma forma transversal, com democratas e republicanos, é esta pretensão de Barack Obama, de facto, de alargar a cobertura de saúde nos Estados Unidos, que é uma das peças graves do sistema de proteção social americano e que muitas vezes é usado como sendo um mau exemplo, tendo em vista a sua comparação com aquilo que é o Estado de Proteção Social Europeu ou o modelo social europeu. Eu terminava, porque essa também é com esta reflexão que aqui a Maria de Belém já nos trouxe, en passant, mas que eu gostava de facto de enfatizar. Muitas vezes olhamos para a questão da saúde apenas na perspectiva do bem-estar, e é evidente que essa deve ser a preocupação central. É de facto uma questão até de cidadania. Mas há uma preocupação complementar que a saúde e o bom funcionamento do sistema de saúde não pode deixar de concitar a nossa preocupação e a nossa atenção, que é a questão do desenvolvimento económico de um país. A questão, um sistema de saúde eficaz é fundamental para assegurar um desenvolvimento económico progressivo e com sucesso, para assegurar a mobilidade e para assegurar a produtividade do trabalhador. Os conselheiros de Barack Obama, exatamente quando defenderam a necessidade de fazer uma reflexão mais acentuada sobre a reforma do sistema de saúde americano, acentuaram particularmente este aspecto. A saúde é essencial para assegurar um desenvolvimento próspero, um desenvolvimento sustentado, é essencial para assegurar a mobilidade dos trabalhadores, é essencial para assegurar a produtividade. Isto é essencial não só do ponto de vista imediato, mas também do ponto de vista mediato, porque quando a saúde não funciona, o que acontece, pois, é que os serviços de saúde, na linha final de vida das pessoas, têm custos muito elevados. Nos Estados Unidos, em concreto, são as chamadas emergency houses, que têm custos elevadíssimos no orçamento americano e que, obviamente, este plano de Barack Obama visa comatar ou mitigar. E, portanto, são estas as reflexões que eu queria aqui deixar, enfim, em jeito de introdução. Obviamente que os nossos especialistas que hoje aqui se pronunciarão sobre esta matéria terão seguramente reflexões bem mais supesadas e aprofundadas sobre estas questões, mas eu creio que o essencial é, de facto, que consigamos, com este colóquio, com a interação que seguramente ocorrerá também com a assistência, com os ilustres convidados, com os eles oriundos do setor académico, do setor empresarial e dos mais ilustres que a nossa sociedade civil hoje nos confere, seguramente conseguiremos alcançar um resultado que seja uma reflexão certeira, uma reflexão estratégica sobre aquilo que deve ser, ou que devem ser os caminhos que o Serviço Nacional de Saúde deve travar, com vista a conseguir aquilo que é, de facto, o chamado ponto de equilíbrio, o ponto de Arquimedes, que é uma Serviço Nacional de Saúde financeiramente equilibrado, mas qualitativamente exemplar, qualitativamente de excelência. Muito obrigado a todos.
Eu ia agora convidar a doutora Sarah Thompson para vir aqui para a mesa para nos proferir a sua conferência de abertura. Como eu já referi, a doutora Sarah Thompson é investigadora na London School of Economics and Political Science. É membro também do Observatório Europeu dos Sistemas de Saúde e tem dedicado grande parte do seu estudo a estas matérias. E foi recentemente oradora convidada numa conferência promovida pela Presidência Checa, como eu já vos referi, sobre este tema precisamente. Sarah, thank you for coming. And we will enjoy, I'm sure, your presentation. And now the floor is yours, please.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Maria de Belém Barrera very much for this kind invitation to come and speak to you here today. It gives me great pleasure to be here with you. And it gives me particular pleasure to note that this is part of an event marking the 30th anniversary of your National Health Service. I'm very sorry to say that this is my first visit to Portugal, but the little that I've already seen of your very, very beautiful city makes me certain that I will want to come back. And one of the organizers was apologizing for the weather here, but I must say that when I arrived last night and it was raining, I come from England, I felt completely at home. So my talk today is based on a policy brief that I prepared in collaboration with colleagues from the London School of Economics and the World Health Organization for the European Observatory on Health Systems and Policies. And we began work on this policy brief early last autumn, and we did not yet know that there was about to be a global financial crisis. And I think that the financial crisis has certainly helped to focus people's minds on this, the issue of the financial sustainability of the health sector. But I think it was already a subject of concern for policymakers in a large range of countries. And what we noticed about debates about financial sustainability in the health sector was that it was not always clear what people meant when they talked about financial sustainability. And really our aim in preparing this brief was to try and bring some clarity to the debate. We began by looking at what it is that makes people so worried about levels of healthcare spending. Why is it that people talk about financial sustainability in this sector in particular? Well, first and most obviously, there's the observation that healthcare costs are going up rather than going down. And in the report, we look very briefly at the usual suspects given the blame for driving up healthcare costs. So technology developments, demographic change, particularly in the form of population aging, and rising consumer expectations, and so on. And the question people have raised is, can we afford to pay for healthcare now? And will we be able to afford to pay for healthcare in the coming years? And we look at this concept of affordability from the perspective of the government, since it is the government that pays for most healthcare costs in many countries, and we refer to this as fiscal sustainability. And we also look in less detail at the question of affordability for the economy as a whole. Can the economy afford to pay more and more for healthcare? And we refer to this concept as economic sustainability. And we thought it was important to distinguish between fiscal sustainability, affordability for government, and economic sustainability, affordability for the economy, because we felt that they were sometimes confused in policy debate. So in the US, for example, the United States, concerns about the financial sustainability of the health system are often expressed in terms of the impact of higher spending on healthcare on the US economy. And we heard Barack Obama yesterday saying that the rising level of healthcare expenditure in the US was unsustainable and might eventually bankrupt the country. But the conclusion that is often drawn from this is that the government cannot afford to pay more for healthcare. And the solution that is put forward is that people, individuals, must pay more privately for healthcare. But it is not at all clear how rising levels of private expenditure in relation to public expenditure will actually contribute to economic sustainability. So I think if you look at countries that spend more on healthcare, those countries that generate revenue through private sources rather than public sources, and in the US the balance is about 50-50, are also those that are very high spenders in terms of the percentage of the national economy that they devote to healthcare. I will focus mainly on the issue of fiscal sustainability today, and one way of looking at the issue of fiscal sustainability is to see it as an accounting problem. On one hand, the government has obligations to finance a given level of healthcare coverage for its population. On the other hand, it needs to find the money to meet its obligations to the population. So there is a need to align revenue with expenditure in order to achieve fiscal balance. That's what we refer to as the accounting problem. Now, if the need to achieve fiscal balance is imperative, then we are looking at financial sustainability as an independent objective in its own right, on a par with other objectives for the health system, like health improvement, equity in financing healthcare, equity of access to healthcare, financial protection to ensure that people are not made poor when they need healthcare, and so on. If we think of financial sustainability as an objective in its own right, this is what we are doing. We're putting it on a par with these other health system goals, and we may even make it so that it overrides other objectives. Now, this approach has the advantage of simplifying the policy response to the problem. In order to achieve fiscal balance, we can either find additional money to pay for healthcare, we can take money from different sectors, from education, from transport, from defense, or we can raise taxes to finance additional spending on healthcare, or we can cut public spending on healthcare. I think the options are quite straightforward. However, we argue in the report that this approach has its limitations. First of all, if we see financial sustainability as a policy objective, then as I have said, the easiest way to meet the objective is simply to cut spending. And if we take this to its logical conclusion, then the most financially sustainable health system would be no health system at all. And clearly this is not what policymakers intend when they talk about concerns for financial sustainability. Second, if the imperative is to achieve fiscal balance at any cost, then the consequences of the ways in which we try to achieve fiscal balance don't really matter. It doesn't matter whether we cut spending from primary care and give it to secondary care. It doesn't matter whether we cut spending from education and give it to health. The main goal is simply to achieve fiscal balance. Thirdly, if we focus on achieving fiscal balance at all costs, then we risk undermining the ability of the health system to meet its other goals. And we may also ignore underlying inefficiencies which may be contributing to the fiscal constraint in the first place. And we might actually make the fiscal constraint more severe by failing to address the underlying waste in the health sector. So for these three reasons, we think it's more important to think, or more useful to think, of financial sustainability as a constraint that must be respected, but not really as an objective that we are striving to achieve in its own right. Nevertheless, countries are facing a fiscal constraint, and what can we do to address it? In the report, we identify three key questions that we may want to ask ourselves in addressing this issue. First of all, how much should we spend on health? Are we spending enough money on health? Do we actually need to spend more money on health? Secondly, what level of healthcare coverage do we want to provide for the population? And if we need to make cuts in public spending, this will imply cuts in coverage, what criteria can we use to guide the process of making cuts so that we're not simply cutting the first thing that we can think of? And thirdly, how can we improve the performance of the health system? Can we do better? As the chair of the Finance Committee has said, can we do better with the resources that we already have? And if we decide that we do need to spend more on health, how do we ensure that the extra money that we put into healthcare results in extra benefit and is not simply wasted? And we argue in the report that in order to answer these three questions, we need to be very, very clear about our policy goals for the health system. We need to have a clear idea about what the health system is for and where it is going. So how much should we be spending on health? In some ways, this is obviously not a straightforward question. It depends on lots of factors. But it is, I think, an essentially political decision. First, as I have just said, in deciding what the goals are for the health system, and this is a matter of reflecting societal and political values about what we want the health system to stand for and to achieve. And secondly, in deciding what level of attainment of the health system's goals we are willing to sustain. Let me show you some data to illustrate the extent of political choice involved in deciding how much we should be spending on health. This figure shows the level of public spending on health as a percentage of GDP in the European Union in 1997, that's the light blue column, and 2007, so that's 27 member states of the European Union. There are two points to make about this. First of all, there is variation across countries. Not all countries spend the same amount on healthcare through the government. Secondly, the overwhelming trend in the last 10 years has been to increase the level of public spending on health as a percentage of GDP, so to increase spending on health through the government. This figure shows total public spending on all sectors, not just health, as a percentage of GDP. Again, in the European Union in 1997 and 2007. And this figure broadly indicates the size of government or the size of the public sector as a whole, which is really the fiscal context of a particular country. Once again, you can see there's variation across countries in the size of government, and the overwhelming trend in the last 10 years has been a reduction in the size of the public sector as a proportion of GDP. So we see in the last 10 years that public spending on health has been increasing, and yet the size of the public sector has been decreasing. How is this possible? Well, the answer, of course, lies in this figure, which shows you spending on health as a percentage of total public spending. And this broadly indicates, we might say, the priority that governments accord to the health sector. Once again, you can see variation across countries. And once again, the overwhelming trend in the last 10 years has been to give greater priority to healthcare, even as the size of the public sector has been shrinking. So in other words, in most of these countries, governments have made a political decision to sustain the attainment of health system goals, even in the face of growing fiscal constraints. So even as the public sector has been contracting, governments have decided to allocate more resources to health from public means. And very briefly, just to illustrate how different countries with the same fiscal context can have very different priorities for health, in the top two rows in the red, I've got the Czech Republic and Cyprus, which are two countries with a very similar size of government, around 40 to 45% of GDP, and the Czech Republic spending about 14% of its public budget on health versus only about 7% in Cyprus. Again, if you look at Ireland and Estonia, two countries that have a much smaller government, about 35% of GDP, you have Ireland according a much higher priority to health, spending about 17% of its public budget, versus Estonia, which spends about 12% of its public budget on health. And I think we can see very clearly from this that one consequence of lower spending on health by government is higher spending by patients in the form of this final column here, which shows the level of out-of-pocket spending as a percentage of total health spending. So different countries with very similar fiscal contexts make different choices about how much they want to spend on health. Going back to the original question of how much we should spend on health, clearly it's a political decision about the size of government, first of all, and then about how much of that government budget we want to spend on health. But it is also, I think, useful to think of it as an investment decision. How can we get the best return for our resources? And the answer to this question lies in balancing the opportunity cost of spending on health with the benefits that we gain from this spending on health. Inevitably, this means that there must be trade-offs between spending on health versus spending on education or defense or transport, but also within the health sector, between spending on primary care versus spending on secondary care, doctors, nurses, and so on. So this involves a range of decisions that need to be made. Now, if we think of financial or fiscal sustainability as an independent objective, then the goal would simply be to match revenue and expenditure. But we don't know whether we have the right level of alignment of revenue and expenditure. As I said, are we spending enough? Are we not spending enough? And what we should be aiming for, I think, is the level of alignment between revenue and expenditure that maximizes the attainment of the goals of the health system, whatever those goals might be, subject to this requirement of fiscal balance. Now, I mentioned earlier the issue of economic sustainability and how in some contexts the decision about how much to spend on healthcare may be influenced by concerns about the impact of healthcare spending on the economy. People worry that health consumes more and more of the economy and there will be less money to spend on other things. And I just want to show you these figures here, which show the government's U.S. government spending, the size of the U.S. economy in 2003 and projections for the size of the U.S. economy in 2013 made by government actuaries. And the light blue shows non-health spending, so all other sectors of the economy, and the dark blue shows you health spending. So in 2003, health already consumes quite a large proportion of of the whole economy, and in 2013 that proportion is almost doubled. It's much larger, and yet the size of the economy has grown, so there is still much more left to spend on other things. And of course, most countries in Europe are not at the level of spending that the US has reached, which is about 15% of GDP. I think the highest countries in the European Union are at about 11.5% of GDP. So I think the question of the impact on the economy is a genuine one, but I think we have not reached the point where it needs to be a major, major cause for concern. In thinking about how much we should be spending on healthcare, we need to think about, is spending on healthcare worth it? And I think there is enormous research now that shows that spending on health brings a large degree of benefit to individuals and to society as a whole. There is also much more research now about the multiple ways in which health and healthcare can contribute to economic growth. And I'm very pleased that the chair of the Finance Committee has already made this point. There is a link between health and spending on health, investment in health and economic growth. And colleagues of mine from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and the WHO have done a lot of work demonstrating this in the European context. Also, spending money on health now, particularly in investing in things like prevention and public health, may save money in future. So there may be a slight increase in costs in the short term, but in the medium to longer term, you'll be making the health system more efficient and perhaps preventing greater expenditure in future. So I think we can see from the research that there is already that it is broadly worth it. Spending on health is broadly worth it in terms of the balance between costs and benefits. But with some caveats, however, not all spending generates the same value, and we can see this across countries and also within countries, that some countries spend much more on health and yet achieve lower health outcomes than countries that spend much less on health and yet achieve the same or even better health outcomes. And just to illustrate that point, I want to show you some data on amenable mortality, which is deaths that could be prevented through timely access to healthcare, so deaths caused by asthma, diabetes, heart disease, and so on. These are things where the health system can make a real difference to people's mortality. And you can see, this shows you the figures across the top, shows you the deaths per 100,000 populations that could be prevented by minimal mortality. And countries like the US have a very high rate of mortality, even though they spend so much more on health than a lot of countries, or all countries in the European Union. Some countries like France do very well, and so on. So there's a variation across countries in how much benefit countries get from spending on health. Not all financing mechanisms are equally effective in generating revenue. So countries that rely very heavily on employment-based financing may find themselves facing challenges with this in the future. I'm thinking of social health insurance, say countries like France and Germany and so on that rely on the labour market to finance healthcare, and the US, of course. And you will have seen in the news in the last few weeks the bankruptcy of General Motors in the United States, and one of the reasons cited for that was the high cost of employment or labour having to pay for healthcare. And then there are very important distributional issues. Who is it that pays for healthcare, and who is it that benefits from healthcare? And if one of our goals for the health system is to provide healthcare on an equitable basis and also to pay for healthcare on an equitable basis, then I think this is a concern for us. And some financing mechanisms may be better at distributing resources more evenly across the country and across income groups than others. What level of health coverage do we want to provide for the population? And if we face a very severe fiscal constraint and we need to make cuts in spending, this really implies cuts in coverage. And there are three aspects of coverage that can be cut or lowered or reduced. The first is the breadth of coverage, whether we cover the whole population and we have universal coverage, or whether we decide to exclude certain groups from the population. And most often the groups that are excluded tend to be richer groups. In some countries they might be given the choice of public coverage or private coverage, as in Germany, or as in the Netherlands prior to 2006, the richest third of the population was simply not eligible for public coverage. Now this is one very simple way in the short term to cut public spending on healthcare, but the public budget may also lose out if it loses the contributions of these richer people. And in fact, it may not alleviate pressure on the public budget, because the public budget may find that because excluding richer the richer part of the population segments the population, you have a concentration of low risks among the richer groups and a concentration of high risks among the poorer groups, you end up with a segmented market, and the public budget may actually end up covering a disproportionately high risk group of people, and it may struggle to finance that if it's lost the contributions of richer people. If you exclude poorer groups, of course, in the end, the government is the insurer of last resort. And in Estonia, for example, where some people are not eligible for public coverage, those people do have access to emergency coverage that is financed by the government. And in many cases, emergency care is much more expensive to provide, and these people, if they were given access to primary care and secondary care, might actually enable a more efficient use of public resources. The second way in which we might cut coverage is to cut the depth of coverage. So you provide people, you cover everybody, you provide them with a decent range of benefits, but you say, okay, we're going to make you pay at the point of use. We're going to introduce or expand the user charges that we make you pay to access publicly financed services. And I think one thing to note from the international evidence on this is that I think we need to lower our expectations about how much we can achieve through user charges. Much of healthcare spending is concentrated on a very small proportion of the population who often have chronic conditions, chronic illnesses, are very high users of healthcare. And in most countries that do charge people for healthcare at the point of use, they usually exempt older people or children, and they often exempt these people with chronic conditions for very good reason, because they need regular access to healthcare. And therefore, you may not actually achieve much expenditure saving at all. And in fact, there is no published evidence to show that user charges result in long-term cost control to the health system. So they're unlikely to contain costs, and you may not generate much revenue through them. There may be some potential for what is known as value-based cost sharing, where you decide, for example, to have a very low rate of user charges for highly effective drugs, drugs that are cost-effective and are very cheap, and you may charge patients a little bit higher for drugs that are ineffective or drugs that are not cost-effective. Or you might charge people who decide and decide to see a specialist without visiting their family doctor first. And these are ways of trying to direct patients towards more efficient means of accessing healthcare. And there might be some potential there. But again, I think we need to lower our expectations about the extent to which relying on cost sharing can actually alleviate pressure on the public budget. And finally, there is this area of coverage scope. Think about the range of benefits that we provide at the moment. And I think this is the area where there is most potential for savings to the public budget, and where there is potential to be very systematic in how we think about the benefits that we provide for people. Countries across Europe are now making much greater use of health technology assessment to exclude services that are ineffective, and also sometimes to exclude services that they do not, that are not considered to be cost-effective. And there's already work going on in this, and I think that's an area that deserves much, much greater attention. Not to say that this is at all easy. It's a very political and technically fraught process, but it is one, I think, that it is worth attempting. A very general point about thinking about reducing coverage in the health sector. Of course, lower spending by government means higher spending by patients. So I think when we are thinking about cuts, we want to move away from this idea of just making cuts for the sake of making cuts indiscriminately, which will end up jeopardizing the health of poorer households who will have to rely more on out-of-pocket payments to access healthcare, and also those who are very high users of healthcare. So I think when we are thinking about making cuts, we want to do this as intelligently as we possibly can, as systematically as we can, using explicit criteria to guide the process, and with as much transparency as possible. And I think that is one way, perhaps, of making this process of coverage cuts more acceptable to the public at large. If people can see that there are some explicit criteria that are being adhered to and that the process is open and transparent, that might help. Let me conclude then. I've talked about financial sustainability, and I've said that it is not so much a question of how much we can afford to pay or how much we are willing to pay, but really more a question of what level of attainment of our health system's goals are we willing to sustain. We are not simply talking about sustaining a health system. What we want to sustain is what it is that we want the health system to achieve. Spending on health involves political choices. I think it would be useful to look at it as an investment decision, thinking about the opportunity costs of spending on health or not spending on health, and inevitably there will be trade-offs between different sectors and within the health sector. When we think about healthcare coverage, we want to make sure that we are discerning in the way in which we try and reduce coverage if we need to, rather than just having cuts across the board, because we do not want to undermine the attainment of our health system goals. And finally, there is the $6 million question of how to improve the performance of the health system. And as I have said, I think, first of all, if we are thinking about performance, we need to be very clear about the goals of our health system. There is a whole range of steps that can be taken to maximize value in the health system, to do better with the resources we have, but also to ensure that any extra money that we spend is really worth it in terms of benefits. These different mechanisms, I don't have time to go into them today. They are in the policy brief. And the point that I just want to make is that they should be informed by research evidence. And there is a lot of research evidence about things, which means that there is a lot that we know about. There is, of course, still things that we don't know about, but I think there is enough research and policy analysis to be starting with. There is a clear role for stewardship by the Ministry of Health and by the government as a whole. And at the conference where I met Maria de Belém Rosera, there was a colleague of mine who said, I think the Ministry of Health should not be the guardian of inputs to the health sector, so it shouldn't just be worrying about the health budget the whole time and getting more money from the Ministry of Finance. The Ministry of Health should think of itself as a guardian of health outcomes across the country, and I thought that was a really very nice way of summing it up. What about the effects of the financial crisis? Well, even before the financial crisis, we were already facing tough choices in our health systems, and I think the financial crisis simply makes those choices more difficult. Some people have suggested that because there is a financial crisis, because we have a fiscal constraint, this is no time to be talking about values and health system goals. We take the opposite view. We think that it is just as important, if not even more important, that we are very clear about our values and our health system goals. Because if we do not know what our goals are, then we will fall back on cutting for the sake of cutting, and in the longer term, this may even make the fiscal constraint worse. None of this is easy. I think there are political hurdles at every step in deciding how much to spend on healthcare, in deciding what might be cut, if anything, and in trying to improve the performance of the health system. There will be political hurdles to jump at every stage, but I think if we don't try and address the issue of financial sustainability now, we will miss a very valuable opportunity to hold an open debate about what it is that we value from health and from our health system, and how best we can design our health system or improve our health system so that it is doing what we really want it to do. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I don't know if anybody wants to put some questions. We have a little bit of delay. De qualquer das formas, eu peço desculpa porque a qualidade de som não é melhor. Porventura, os auscultadores e a tradução, ou pelo menos a audição também no inglês original, puderam proporcionar o seguimento desta conferência. Eu iria talvez sumariar as questões mais importantes desta conferência da doutora Sarah Thompson, e um dos aspectos fundamentais é que frisou bem que a sustentabilidade fiscal não é apenas um problema contabilístico, uma vez que a não existência de déficits não significa por si só eficiência, que uma atenção focada apenas na sustentabilidade fiscal pode ignorar as questões de eficiência e minar os objetivos da política de saúde e que, portanto, a questão do equilíbrio entre despesas e receitas é um constrangimento e não um objetivo em si. E que, portanto, há aqui questões políticas essenciais sobre quanto cada país está disposto a despender ou orientar para a saúde, a que nível e como estas são, efetivamente, as questões essenciais. E relativamente aos pontos-chave, o da sustentabilidade financeira, que nível de objetivos estamos dispostos a sustentar, a despesa em saúde que implica escolhas políticas, custos de oportunidade e trade-offs, como nós sabemos, a cobertura de saúde e as alterações que aqui se façam devem ser com base em escolhas inteligentes e não cortes indiscriminados e que a melhoria do desempenho tem que ter em conta objetivos, os valores, a análise política e também a transparência na gestão destes sistemas face à importância e ao volume de recursos que lhes estão associados. Não sei se alguém da assistência quer fazer alguma pergunta, não registando eu esse interesse, pelo menos agora nesta fase, vamos tentar cumprir o horário, fazer agora aqui o nosso coffee break. Em nome de todos, agradecer muito estes desafios que a doutora Sarah Thompson aqui nos colocou em cima da mesa, no local certo, uma vez que estamos no órgão de soberania por excelência onde estas escolhas políticas são feitas, e dizer que continuaremos, por certo, a contar consigo um pouco mais nesta conferência para também assistir às outras intervenções que terão interesse para quem investiga e para quem se dedica do ponto de vista académico à análise de todas estas matérias. Vamos então fazer aqui um pequeníssimo intervalo e regressaremos, 10 minutos o máximo, e regressaremos para iniciar o próximo painel. Então, até já.